Welcome to Office Hours with Adam Peterson, where I talk to business owners, employees, entrepreneurs and experts to find answers to those day-to-day questions about life and work in Luxembourg. If you have questions you'd like answered, let me know at adam.peterson@rtl.lu or on LinkedIn. But for now, on to today's show. For those of you who chose to do it, do not fear, tomorrow is February, and dry January 2025 will be consigned to history. For those of us who have continued to drink through January, our wine cellars might start to look a little empty. Which means for the whole of Luxembourg, it's a good time to buy some more wine. So to help me understand this business and give me tips on how to buy some wine, I have two guests. I have from Paul's Vineyard, I have Paul Zahlen.
Hello.
And from Sunen Hoffman, I have Mary Cox.
Yes, hello.
So let's get started. So I met both of you at the Festival of Vin and Cremant back in November in Luxembourg City at the Glacis. And I walked from the Eleanor Cox stand to Sunen Hoffman, and I introduced myself as Adam Peterson. You introduced yourself as Mary Cox. And I thought, I've had too many drinks. I'm confused. I'm in the wrong place. So Mary, tell me a little about your story, Sunen Hoffman, and how you got into the wine industry.
So I'm Mary. I'm now the sixth generation of our family winery, Sunen Hoffman. So that's actually on my mother's side, Sunen. That's why I took over the Sunen Hoffman family winery.
And who's Hoffman then? So Hoffman is...
Hoffman was the first ones. So the first couple who created the winery in 1872. That was Sunen and Hoffman. That's why we always kept that name.
So you now run the vineyard yourself? You're the boss there, the chef?
Yeah, exactly. I run it together, but still with my mother.
Okay.
So it was always my mother together with his brother before me. And now my uncle is in retirement and I took over 2 years ago. And I run it together with my mother. But I'm more responsible for all the vineyard management and the cellar. And my mother is more doing the office works.
Paul, your stand was very different. So most of the stands have a double barrel surname like Sunen Hoffman or Bernard Massard or whatever. Yours is just Paul's. So that seemed quite different, quite fresh. So tell me a little bit about Paul's Vineyard.
We are not as traditional. We started 2021, just small business beside my main job. Well, I never expected to grow this fast, this big, but it did. Yeah, this Paul is my name, and it's Paul's Winery. That's there was a baker in Luxembourg who was called Paul, so we did not want to be mentioned as a bakery. We want to do something different. That's why we choose to add an S at the end to make it more clear.
So even though there's only one Paul, it's Paul's as in belonging to Paul. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you said it was your, you had a different main job. So what was the job you were doing previously?
I'm working for the Luxembourgish estate as a winemaker.
Okay.
We had tryout station, so where we do try some new vineyard machines, new wine products, new style of wine treatments. And I work there as a main job, and I do polls beside this job as a 60% for the estate and 40% at home.
So help me understand then how all this kind of fits together, because I think you have different types of business. You've got Bernard Massard is like a big private estate. Then you have the Domaine Mademoiselle. Yeah. So Le Vigneron, which are the bottles where you get the faces of the folks on them. Then there's independent. I think Sunen Hoffman's independent.
Yes.
Paul's is independent. But then you have people that sell. Paul isn't independent.
Paul isn't. Well, the Independent Winemakers is an association where you can be member, but you don't need to be member. And it has some advantages. We don't need those yet, so we are not a member. But I understand why other businesses get together as a groupment to get some political force, to get some help in law actions, etc.
But in theory, you are independent.
I'm not delivering to anybody else.
So you're independent, but you're not a member of the group.
Privatwinzer.
Yeah, exactly.
What's that word again?
Privatwinzer.
Okay.
It's private. Winemaker. Okay. Yeah.
So why did you decide to go out on your own? Why did you not continue? I think you were saying before your grandparents used to have a vineyard. So tell me a little bit more about that story.
I was a little frustrated at my actual job, my main job. And the idea was, if I can do the same work, but the end result will be way more recognizing if you can, like, basically do it for yourself. Working for the Luxembourgish state is interesting. You can see all the new stuff, but working for yourself is still different. And you get a complete other satisfaction for this job than if you do it for somebody else. And that was basically the idea of why we started to do it differently.
Yeah.
And well, we have a different approach on so many things, like not different from everybody, but different from the majority of the winemakers. So why do we need to work all in the same box?
Yeah,
we can work outside of this box. There's no issue.
It seems like it would bring a lot more work, though. I was talking to an artist recently, and they were saying that actually they like the tie with the gallery because they can then focus on their art, and then the gallery worries about the sales and marketing. Mm-hmm. No. Whereas if you're going totally independent, you're not joining this, you're then bringing in that work in-house of doing the sales and marketing, the branding, which seems like it might take you away from your passion of the wine itself.
Yes, you're absolutely right. But there is, you cannot work 100% as a small winery into marketing. You cannot work 100% into the cellar. You cannot work 100% in the vineyard. So, there's bad weather, you do your marketing, you do your back office. If there's good weather, you go outside and you work in the vineyard or you work in your cellar. That's the big advantage because we are such a small winery. So there's not everyday work at the same spot.
Yeah.
You don't go to the same office every day.
Which is good variety. So tell me about some of the advantages that you get of being one of the in private wine growers collective.
Yeah, it's probably because there are some events that are organized together. So you probably have a bigger visibility, and you can maybe be more present on some events. But I never ask myself that question, why we are part of the Privatwinzer, because it was always like that. And I didn't have any issues with it.
Good, that makes sense. Now, one of the things, just to go back then to the vineyards, I was looking at your website, Paul, and then I was seeing that you're heading the direction of becoming a organic producer, biological producer. And then, Mary, we were in email communication, and you told me that your vineyard was the first one, or one of the first one, according to you. And so tell me about the benefits of going organic, being a biological producer.
Yeah, I think we as winemakers, we have to work with nature because we are depending on it. We have so many influences from outside that we can't control.
So I'm a chemist originally, right? So I'm a chemist, and I would think, well, chemicals are great because then it takes out a lot of variables in the system. I can just solve that problem of pests with chemicals, where it seems as though you're bringing in kind of variability and challenge, which may not necessarily get the same
return on investment. I don't think that we're bringing challenges, but I do think over long term we need to work like with nature and don't put each year that many amount of pesticides to it, because otherwise we are going to destroy it. And we can see like all over the world the effects of the climate change, and if we don't work with nature like in some years, we aren't any possibilities to work anymore with nature.
And I think it's a big crowd out there with understanding why you work organically and all the benefits of it. it has some negative points. Everything, there is no 100% right solution. But organic is the one that's going, in my eyes, into the best possible direction. So we should work on how we can do the best we can do. Not everybody can give 100%, so take what you can and do it. I think that's a big point, too, of why we should work a lot more organic.
Yeah, everybody can put a little bit more into that direction. Doesn't need to be like 100% organic, as you said, because not everything is 100% good.
So I was a chemist. I'm no longer a chemist. I'm a failed chemist.
All good. No judging.
And then I want to return to a little bit of the different sorts of business models that are there. So you're sure you're probably aware, the people that then sell to the cooperatives as opposed to branding to themselves. At which point, do they hand over control of their wine? Do they just supply the grapes? Do they supply the liquid? Do they bottle themselves? Or is it different models depending on different...
I think they only bring in their grapes. So they don't have any possibility to give a... So their opinion about the wine. Yeah. And I think that's actually the main point as being a winemaker, because you want to tell your story or the story of the grapes you want to tell in your products. And if you are just delivering your grapes, you cannot do it.
Yeah. I think it has something to do with responsibility too. The cooperatives back in the days, they came up because not everybody could make wine. So it's a big advantage, basically, if you deliver to the cooperative, beside the money part, but from the easiest of doing vineyards is you produce the grapes, you sell them, you have no issues in the cellar. Of course, it's not your responsibility anymore. You get your money and you're done. To be honest, if you want to earn money with vineyards, you need to do your own wine, because just selling the grapes is not the big market. You're not getting rich there. Well, you're not getting rich either with the wine bottles, but still, there is quite a different revenue if you sell the bottles. It's way more work, but at the end, you get more.
Yeah.
So halfway through, you're cutting your business, your cash flow, basically.
Yeah. And help me understand what the environment's down there. So you talked about the Privat Fenster, I think it's there. And then we've been having a conversation, you two, obviously on good terms. Is the Moselle Valley, is it like, the town where Adidas and Puma are? And there's two competing companies in the same town that hate each other. Or are you kind of more collaborators and you support each other as winemakers, because you're all facing the same challenges of the weather and the economic conditions? So
there's some people when they come to you. I was at your at the other vineyard, the enemy, if you want to call it like this. I'm like, no, it's not an enemy. It's a colleague. It's another vineyard, but it's never an enemy. And there's, I think, a pretty simple explanation to that. If I cannot deliver all the wines that needs to be delivered into Luxembourg, why should I handle the other vineyards an enemy? Because there is a market out there and everybody is working into this market. And as long as I cannot do it all by myself, why should I call the others enemies?
Yeah. So the market is big enough for everyone to have a piece.
Everybody wants a piece of the cake, but...
Yeah.
You talked a little bit there about selling into the market of Luxembourg. I see French wines on the shelves in Luxembourg everywhere. And when I go to France, I never see Luxembourgish wines.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't go to Germany that often. So are the Luxembourgish wines sold in Germany? So how... Is there any barriers within EU's a single market in theory, but are there any barriers that are kind of stopping Luxembourgish wines being sold in different countries?
I think the problem, it's Luxembourgish wines and Crémants are not so well known outside of Luxembourg. So probably the sommeliers and they are not so interested in buying Luxembourgish products because the customers doesn't know it. I think that's actually one of the main reasons why Luxembourgish wine...
So with the market of Luxembourg, and obviously the population keeps growing in Luxembourg, there is enough demand within Luxembourg for the Luxembourgish wines?
I don't know the exact numbers, but I would say like 90% of the wine selling is within Luxembourg. Maybe you have somebody who's coming from just across the border, but they work here or they have family here, then they take some bottles with them into the export, if you want to call it like that. But I think 90% or even more is just selling in Luxembourg.
You were both at the event on the Glacis in November. You're not doing similar events in Germany or other places?
Not yet.
We do.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, a little bit. And because I think it's still important to show... Mm-hmm. Like that we have interesting products and that we have a really good quality price ratio. We really need to show it outside of Luxembourg. Mm-hmm.
And do you get support from the Luxembourg Ministry of Tourism?
We do get a little bit of support. Like, for example, now for the Wine Paris, that's a big... ferry in Paris, one of the biggest one, and there we go with a group of Luxembourgish wine producers, so also independents and also bigger ones, and there we get support by the government.
Great. So we know a bit more about your backgrounds, your vineyards, a bit about how the industry works down in the Moselle Valley in Luxembourg. So we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm going to give you some of the questions about how we should go out there and how we should choose the right wine. So we'll be back in a moment.
Hi everyone, I'm Haley Allam and I'm the host of RTL Today's new parenting podcast, Mom Life in Luxembourg. From crèches to crèmes, we'll cover everything you need to know about raising kids and living your best life in the Grand Duchy. Grand Duchy. Grand Ducal? New episodes are out every Friday on Today Radio at 11 a.m. or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back in 2020, the Peterson family had a blind champagne tasting party, and Aldi offer knocked the socks off Veuve Clicquot and Moët & Chandon. More recently, in our Wines of the Moselle blind tasting competition, there was a joint winner. The most expensive €25 bottle, but it was joint with the €5 screw top joker that I added to the competition. So welcome back to part two. In part one, we looked at some of the workings of the wine industry, and now we'll get into some of the chewier questions, and I want to start with the pricing of wine. So going back to the results of my blind tasting competitions we did with our friends, it kind of reinforced the accusation that wine price is all around about brand and image and not the wine itself. So does the cost of the wine correlate with the quality or not?
Luxembourg-wise, I would say yes. Coming from import wines, I would say no. I've seen some wineries, just talking about Champagne, there are smaller wineries, they are worth the money, of course, but... I would say the big five, like, to be honest, they're producing so much. This is industrial winemaking. This has nothing to do with an individual producing chain. And this is nothing to do, in my eyes, with high quality production. This is just they're upselling the name.
Yeah, I think I can agree to that.
So your number one starting point would be avoid the big brand names because you're just paying for the brand.
Yeah.
Yeah, it depends on what you're looking for. If you just,
if you want a gift, brand.
If you want to drink the name, then you can go for the big ones.
The other one in there was the and to be honest, there were the €5 screw top was very well chilled, so that's what made it taste a little bit better as well. But the screw top, it makes more sense for the wine because it's better at stopping the oxygen getting in than the cork. So why do we use... Why is the screw tops cheaper than the...
I have a very good explanation for that. Just from the natural handling, the screw top has a way bigger CO2 food stamp than a cork. A cork, just for a quick explication, a cork, a natural cork to grow needs 9 years. Into these 9 years, cork tree consumes as much CO2 from the atmosphere as it... needs for the wine and the bottle and the cork and the whole thing. So we're producing basically the same amount of CO2 as the cork tree consumes on one cork. So basically you're...
Net zero.
You're at zero.
This is carbon net zero in action.
That's a neutral footprint. And if you add the screw top is metal material. It needs to be mined. It needs to be treated. So you're adding CO2 food stamp to the producing of the bottle, to the producing of the wine, to the, well, the grape producement in the vineyard. So it is not quite even with the natural cork, but it is, at least it is very close.
Yeah, you've got me there. And to be honest, our wine never lasts long enough in our house for it to go off and the oxygen to go through the cork.
Yeah, if you want to have a wine that needs to be drunk quickly, then a screw top
is easier.
But
and then the other one, you go to the supermarket and the cheaper bottles are often in green glass. Is there something to do with the glass color and some glasses are cheaper to produce?
If you're using like the white bottles, like
the clear ones,
there you could have an effect on the wine quality because there you can have the UV rays can go through and then you can get a fault in your wine.
That's your German UV rays.
Yeah.
Ultraviolet.
Our
theory was that the green glass was cheaper, and we weren't sure whether you'd only put cheap wine in the cheap glass or whether it's actually better value because then you're paying less for the bottle and more for the wine. But I'm not conclusive on that one.
I think the color, it's the darker bottles are way cheaper than the clear bottles.
Yeah.
Well, there's a reason for it. If you take the recycled glass, it's always part of the glass production is recycled glass. There will be clear glass, brown glass, green glass, and everything mixed together. And you never get this glass clear again. So that might be a reason why the colored bottles are cheaper than the white ones. But still, if it's the green or the brown one is cheaper, I don't know. But what is in the price difference is the form of the bottle.
Okay.
If you have these long neck bottles, the standard one is way cheaper than the Bourgogne style.
With the shoulders
belly.
On them. Yeah. Okay.
I don't know about the Bordeaux style, but this is the three main styles of bottles we have here in Luxembourg.
Yeah, our theory with red wine, it's not so much white wine, but with red wine is there's a big like dimple in the bottom of the bottle. And the theory was that if there's a big dimple on the bottom of the bottle, then it'd be a good bottle of wine. And if the bottom of the bottle was flat, then it wouldn't.
I don't know.
Use that as a thing to buy. Okay, a quick fire question. Would you ever drink wine out of a box?
I did it, but I wouldn't do it again.
Maybe when you were a student.
Yeah.
Okay.
So a few more sensible tips about buying wine there. So when I was at the festival, I was asking people, you know, which wine are you drinking? And everyone kept saying to me, 23. Is the year one of the most important things you should focus on? Because that's effectively the weather, and the weather then gives the quality of the grapes.
I think this question is way more diverse than
educate me.
Mentioned.
Educate me.
It depends on what you want to do with this wine. You want to buy it today and drink it tomorrow? Well, then it is the year you have. But if you want to keep it in your cellar, and you want to drink it in 5, 10, 15, 20 years, depending on the grape variety, the year is, in my eyes, a bigger match point. Not every year will develop into very fine wine at the end of the day. So you have the more hard years and more probable years with possible fungicides and all these things come into the process. At the end of the day, your wine will not last as long. Just keeping it simple here. The problem is it's very hard to predict in advance if this wine will last 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. The way I think most of Luxembourgish winemakers work is we are producing the wines so you can drink them easily now, but in 5 years too. So this is a lifespan of a wine. 5 years is like, I think it's no issue to drink a box of wine in 5 years, but hopefully more. So this is something every wine in Luxembourg stands. Go to Riesling, you go to Pinot Noir, they last normally way longer. That's
Auxerrois as well.
Auxerrois as well, yeah.
So they last longer?
Yeah, normally. But if you drink them instantly, they will not last longer. But
yeah, yeah, that's my biggest problem, I think. Yeah. If you've got other tips for people when they're out there and they're going to replenish their stock, what would you recommend?
Buy something that you like.
Yeah.
Or just try, yeah, try out.
And if people prefer. Want to do some tests, so the event up at, say, the Glassy was really enjoyable. That in previous years, we've been down to the Riesling Open, which seems to be an event around September. What are the other good moments in the year when people can go and try a load of different vineyards?
Also, the Wine Taste and Joy. Yeah. That's in June, I think.
So that's in June, and where's that held?
That's also all...
Well, there is a big event. You can drive around the whole Moselle with buses.
Yeah.
So you can basically go to one vineyard or to one park and ride, get into the bus, and then you can take the bus along the whole Moselle River, get out of the bus if you think you're at the right place, test some wines, taste some, get to the next one. That's a pretty cool event. Normally, well, like I think the most of the winemakers handle it. They offer something to eat too.
Yeah.
Some try to do more special things, but other ones just do like normal Luxembourgish barbecue. It's quite different from winemaker to winemaker, and that's a pretty cool event.
That's
I think.
Really nice event.
Yeah.
So that's in June. And the best thing about Luxembourg, free public transport. If you wherever you live in the country, you're back.
Yeah.
Don't need to drive the car. Don't need to drink.
People that come down from Lorenzweiler, they took the train. They come down to Luxembourg City. They took the bus to Schengen, and from there on, they went along the river to the vineyards they want to taste, and they took the taxi back because they did not find their bus anymore. But it's okay.
That's also a possibility. Yeah.
So one of the key questions: the Wine Queen. Mary, were you ever a wine queen?
No.
So what's the story of the wine queens?
You need to live in Grevenmacher if you want to be a wine queen. Also, you can be the Riesling queen.
So that's different to the... Okay.
Yeah. And what? But there you need to live in Vormedos.
Okay, so they have a person from the town selected to be the queen.
Mm-hmm.
What's the expectations of a wine queen? What do they have to do?
I think in Luxembourg it's quite low.
Yeah.
Earlier in the years, you needed to be connected to the wines.
Yeah.
In your family or something. But nowadays...
And is it just picked at random?
You just need to be interested.
Yeah. And someone's interested in wine and then they get
Then you need to be 5 years. You need to be a princess.
Really?
And then...
But it will be reduced now to 3 years.
So you've got to be a princess for 5 years, then three, and then okay. One. And but no prince or kings?
No.
Not yet. Maybe.
Mm. You're not tempted, Paul?
I think I'm a little too old to be a prince now. But
never mind. So
we are good now.
I think we're at time there, so time to wrap up. So thank you both so much for coming in. In addition to having an enjoyable chat, I now feel better prepared to restock my garage shelf because our 1970s house in Gaspisch doesn't have a wine cellar. So if people would like to contact you or get more information about your wine, where should they go?
Yes, to zinnen-hoffmann.lu, so on our internet site, or on the Instagram, zinnen-hoffmann.
Paul?
Pauls.lu, very easy. Instagram, Facebook,
fantastic.
Give us, you can contact us per email. Just I want to add one little thing for everybody out there. If you want to get into Luxembourgish wine, there is a simple way. Contact the closest winemaker, get there and try the wines. If it does not fit, go to the next one. But don't get into the fear of not finding good wine in Luxembourg. It is out there. It needs sometimes a little searching, but you're going to find it, and you're going to find Luxembourgish wine for your cellar too.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. Everyone I've come across on my journey of experiencing Luxembourg wine has been super friendly, super helpful.
Yeah.
People deliver to the city for free, you know, no issues getting, ordering one case, five cases. Yeah. People are super flexible. So thank you both and the rest of your industry.
Thank you very much.
So that's it for today's episode. If you have feedback and questions on this topic or any other, drop me a line at adam.peterson@rtl.lu or on LinkedIn.